The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
There's a reason that we live so far from Hollywood, in the country looking hard to find a home, but nothing perfect or considered.
Canada, July 7, Wednesday in the year of the plague, 2020, and I am Hugh Hewitt. Good morning to you, wherever you are. I'm heading off on a break tomorrow and Friday. Colonel Kurt Schlichter will be in for me. It is the fetching Mrs. Hewitt and my 38th wedding anniversary, 38 wonderful years of her putting up with me, and the 20th anniversary of the Hugh Hewitt Show on Friday. So we're just doing a little bit of celebrating. She puts up with a lot with this radio show and with me, and has been doing so, really, for 41 years, since we dated for 3 years prior to getting married. So I just would just beg your indulgence for a couple of days. It's not my vacation. It's just a thank you to her. There are places you can still drive to during the virus. I want to begin the rundown today with a different, not the headlines. One headline triggered me to think about this. I spent 12 years in parochial school at St. Pius X, at St. Mary's, at Blessed Sacrament, and at John F. Kennedy High School in Warren, Ohio. And I had pretty good parents. I had superb parents. They were all united in one mission, which was to introduce into their three boys, those schools educated my brothers as well, and my parents, and my family at large and their friends, basic human decency and courtesy. The idea of a conscience, the idea that the people around you are deserving of dignity and respect. They are very much products of the Midwest, products of their upbringing. Both of my parents were Depression kids. My great-grandfather was an immigrant. My mother's family, not much longer here. They didn't have anything in the Depression, zero. My grandfather had an uncle who died. He was a farmer who got to go to law school. They didn't have to go to college in between in those days. Later in his life than you would normally do it today. And he did, and he became a judge and was moderately successful. My grandfather was a fireman. So they were very modest people. They made a good living. My dad was a small-town lawyer because after the war, he went to the war, of course, but after the war, University of Michigan Law School admitted him, and he did it in 2 years, and he practiced law at the same. But he was insistent. You know, he coached the basketball team for 25 years. He served on the hospital board. He did all that stuff. My mom was a nurse, never went to college, but they insisted on basic human dignity. And you didn't get out of line. And of course, Sister Mary Columba, Mrs. Was, I can name almost all my teachers, Ms. Bocone, Sister Rita Burns. You want me to go through Sister Grace and Sister Marianne Benita? I can name them all. Father Leonard, Vic Garcia. Some of them were good, some of them were bad, but they were all pretty much insistent on basic human decency. And what we have seen explode in the era of the virus, and it may be the pressure of the virus, it may be the pressure of economic circumstance, I don't know, or it just may be viral videos, is an extraordinary series of enraged individuals using profanity towards and anger towards complete strangers who do the mildest of things, such as, would you wear a mask? That might be coming. I saw one yesterday from Costco. Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic said, would someone post some videos, please, of people acting with generosity, patience, and courtesy towards people in the Costco? And you know, that would be a good idea, just to show a bunch of people in masks asking, you know, not having to ask for basic human decency. Masks do help. It is simply a matter of basic human courtesy towards other human beings, that if you're in close proximity with them, you don't know how fragile they are. You don't know if they've got a chemotherapy patient at home. You don't know if they have someone at MS at home. You don't know if they've got someone who's already got the virus at home and they're making a run, even though they're in the middle of cleaning up slop and taking care of someone with the night sweats and they're in week two and they've been to the hospital a couple of times. You don't know if they've lost someone. You don't know anything about them. So all you have to do is use basic human dignity. Well, I hate to call more attention to it, but you really can't call more attention to it. Everyone will see it. I saw it last night, and I said to myself, oh, boy, Michael Lofthouse is in trouble. Michael Lofthouse is the CEO of a tech startup called, what the heck is the name of it? It will come to you in the story. This is the story this morning in the San Francisco paper. It happened in Carmel Valley. If you've never been to Carmel Valley, it's where Clint Eastwood used to own his restaurant. Silicon Valley tech CEO Michael Lofthouse issued an apology late Tuesday for his behavior captured on a viral video delivering a vulgar and racist comments towards an Asian family celebrating a birthday at a restaurant in Carmel Valley. In a statement issued to the Daily Mail and other media, Lofthouse said he lost control of his emotions. My behavior in the video is appalling, the statement read. This was clearly a moment when I lost control and made incredibly hurtful and divisive comments. I would like to deeply apologize to the Chan family. I can only imagine the stress and pain they feel. I was taught to respect people of all race, and I will take time to reflect on my actions and work to better understand the inequality that so many of those around me face every day. The video originally posted on Instagram shows a man cursing and gesturing with his middle finger at a family at the Bernardus Lodge and Spa's Lucia restaurant. Jordan Chan, the woman who posted the video, told KION the incident happened as her family was celebrating her aunt's birthday on the 4th of July, and the man was insulting and harassing her family with racist language, saying, F you Asians, go back to F-bomb Asian country you're from, and you don't belong here. The video starts with a woman asking the man sitting one table over to repeat what he had just said to them. The man stares at the camera for a few seconds, then extends his finger and says, this is what I say. The man says, Trump's going to F you. And then he stood up to leave, followed by, you effing need to leave. You effing Asian piece of S. A server then immediately yells at him, no, you do not talk to our guests like that. Get out of here. The waitress could be heard saying in the video. It's appalling. And it's a young hipster, right? It's not. He's a tech CEO. This is not some person that you would want to stereotype as a Trump supporter. I have no idea if he's a Trump supporter. Trump's got nothing to do with this. Trump, I've never heard. I've been around the president a lot. Four debates, number of conversations, never once, not one racist term. I don't think there's a racist bone in his body. A lot of people like to call him a racist, but I will say this. It's despicable behavior. And I just don't know where this is coming from in America. I do not believe it's the president. I believe it's a combination of pressures, a combination of bad social media, a combination of all sorts of virus-induced stress. But it's also, and I'm out on a limb here, I think it's a collapse of civility and decency that traces back to the collapse of education. You know, you just could not come out of 12 years of Catholic high school and grade school and do this. You couldn't. It's a pressure machine. It's a molding machine. You know, I don't even remember what we did with an hour of religion a day for 12 years, but we had an hour of religion class a day for 12 years. I don't know what we did. I still can't find a chapter in the Bible. I've heard it all like every time, because you go to Mass every 3 years, you hold every gospel, every bit of every gospel in 3 years. But I still can't find anything. You know, tell me to go find Ephesians. I got to call Mike Regal or Mark Roberts or one of my theologian buddies and say, what the heck are they talking about here? You know, and I talk to people like N.T. Wright on the air and other great theologians. Rick Warren's been on a few times. You know, I talk to people in the book. I talked to Dennis Prager, who's a great teacher of the Talmud and of the Torah. I talked to all these different people, and I just think the collapse of decency is deeply embedded in the turn away from religion. That is why I am so invested in what the Supreme Court hands down tomorrow, which I believe, I'm hoping they're ending their term tomorrow. The Sister Our Lady of Guadalupe case about whether or not religious schools can hire. But you know what? Social media might replace a conscience. What I am learning is that viral videos of jerks and of people who've lost control immediately shame and penalize those people. So what conscience might not have been put into you, viral videos are going to beat into you because everyone's got a phone. Everything is observed. Everyone who participates in unlawful behavior eventually gets arrested. But I must say, in the rundown concluding, just check your conscience, people. Ask yourself, do you want this to go viral? If you can't ask, what would God think about this? Then ask yourself, what if this goes viral on a video? Because honestly, the kind of stuff I see makes me wonder what has happened to the soul of millions of people. That ends today's rundown. The news is next on The Hugh Hewitt Show. President Trump has an announcement for his top supporters. Team Trump will be celebrating the 2020 Republican National Convention this summer. He wants you to enter for your chance to join him at the convention. If you win, Team Trump will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP passes for yourself and a guest. All you have to do is text the word RED, R-E-D, to 88022 today. That's RED to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump at the convention. Again, that's R-E-D to 88022 to enter to win this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be his special guest. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc.
Trouble in my drag you down. You get lost, you can always be found. Just know you're not alone. Cause I'm gonna make this.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I'm exercised by that video. And I've tweeted it out. You can look. I'm exercised that just people can be so randomly cruel. And the setting, I can imagine a family of eight or nine. They're celebrating an aunt's birthday, little kids, and have entitled, wealthy tech CEO. Maybe his company collapsed. I don't know. Maybe he got dumped by his wife. Maybe he got a drug problem. I don't know. I just know it's the most brusquely cruel, racist rant I have seen in a setting. You know, it's not a mob where people are yelling at each other and people have lost control of their emotions. He's just sitting there coolly enjoying probably a $200 sushi dinner. And he lets fly with this racist rant. I can't believe what's happening to people around the world. One piece of news, because I'm consistent. All right. I try and deliver the truth. Yesterday, I was talking about how deaths had only been 244 on Monday or Sunday. Yesterday they peaked. They went up to 902. So it may be that death is a lagging indicator. I know that. But there's a pattern in the death numbers, which is they always spike on Tuesday because of slow reporting on Sunday and Monday. So we'll see if it goes back down tomorrow. I still can't find the chart. And a number of you wrote me yesterday and said you're looking for the same data, which is deaths crosstabbed by age and comorbidity. It would be useful. Tony Fauci doesn't want us to see that. I love Dr. Fauci. I love Dr. Birx. I think they're great Americans, but they don't want us to see that crosstab because they're not pushing it to be released. Time for the market update brought to you by Birch Gold. You can get in touch with Birch Gold by going to HughGold.com or texting my name, Hugh, to 474747. Well, I told you back in December when Birch Gold was first becoming a sponsor of the program, you know, 7 months ago, it was at 1300. You ought to be buying gold because market's pretty high. That was before COVID. I didn't start reporting on COVID till January 17th or 18th, I believe. But gold is today at $1,813, crossed the $1,800 mark last night. So that would have been a quick $400 to $500 gain on every ounce of gold you bought. And I still think gold is where you ought to put a portion of your retirement savings, because whatever happens on this roller coaster of a recovery we're on, and it is a roller coaster, you will know that a portion of your savings are just rock solid in physical metals, and Birch Gold puts them in a vault, put your name on it. It's sort of like the Gringotts Bank in Harry Potter with the goblins, right? You got to, they take care of it for you. It doesn't go anywhere. It's physical. It's not paper. It's the real deal. Or if you want to buy physical gold, again, text my name, Hugh, to 474747 or visit HughGold.com. Well, what happened yesterday was a little retrenchment. They had a bubbly party on Wall Street on Monday and Tuesday. People took profits. The NASDAQ was down 396. The Dow was down 396. NASDAQ was down 89, and S&P was down 34. As I told you, gold topped 1,800, which is its highest level since 2011. Hugh Hewitt's sort of an oracle. But everything overseas today is just a little bit red. So it's actually Hong Kong was up, so I can't say everything overseas. And the 10-year Treasury is down to 0.65%. Light crude hovering around 40. They're not predicting the worldwide recession. They see the worldwide recovery happening. But Wall Street yesterday did have a little bit of a retrenchment. What happened in Amazon yesterday? And Amazon yesterday was up $167 on Monday. It was down 56 yesterday. Looks like a little retrenchment there, building back up on a base. All that good stuff. You know what? All I have to tell you is gold's at a high since 2011. It hasn't been at $1,800. I started telling you to buy it again in December. Birch Gold. Go to HughGold.com. Can I just play for you very quickly Donald Trump at the White House roundtable yesterday, because it makes a point. Cut number 14. He's talking to Missouri Governor Mike Parson.
Daughter's a school teacher. They do that. Most of the time we have a father-daughter relationship, except when it comes to teaching, and she becomes a senior advisor to the governor when we talk about those issues on that. But again, I just want to thank the president for his support for our state. People appreciate it, Mr. President. I want you to know that for the First Lady and for where we're heading this country, because we've went through hard times before, and we'll continue to get through hard times, and we'll be better off for it, and we'll be stronger than ever. So thank you.
And you won't be changing the name St. Louis, will you?
No, we will not be doing that.
Thank you.
Just checking. The president wanted to make sure, making a point, just a little bit of humor, because, you know, they're going to come for St. Louis. They're going to come for San Francisco. They're going to come for Los Angeles. They're all Catholics. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned.
Imagine that slice of time. Rock and roll was young people's student line. To hear music that played into their lives, that you could carry till the day you die. Hey man, sing me a song. When we were everyone, we were more than just a slice of American pie.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. John Androsik's song is terrific. For this moment where I'm talking about this jerk, Michael Lofthouse, who's apologized. Maybe he's not a jerk.
How can you be as nice as me? I'm not from the same slice as me. Where do we go from here, my friend? Is this the way our story ends? Hey, man, sing me a song.
I just think basic decency in the country, at least in Ohio and the Midwest, in the 60s and 70s, was a given. And in Silicon Valley, in the present time, it is. Now, I've met a few Silicon Valley people. John Denniston, you've heard on the show. Mark Zuckerberg, you've heard on the show. Peter Thiel, you haven't heard on the show, but I know Peter. Very decent people. Yeah, they're running massive empires, and they have to make ethical, difficult choices. But decent people, I can't imagine them acting like Michael Lofthouse acted. And if you're just joining the show, he went on a racist rant at a high-end Carmel Valley restaurant towards an Asian-American family that got captured on video and has gone viral, and he's ruined. He can go to a monastery somewhere. But if they carried around with him the simple C.S. Lewis quote, which I consider to be my favorite all-time C.S. Lewis quote, from my favorite all-time C.S. Lewis essay, which is called The Weight of Glory. C.S. Lewis was an Oxford-Cambridge don who taught literature and wrote the Screwtape Letters and wrote The Great Divorce and the children's book, The Chronicles of Narnia, which are actually not just children's books, and who wrote the fantasy trilogy that ends up in That Hideous Strength, one of the most compelling novels of our era. C.S. Lewis wrote, "There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals with whom we joke, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn. We must play, but our merriment must be of the kind, and it is, in fact, the merriest kind, which exists between people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. Now, C.S. Lewis is a great Christian writer, so his work is informed by his understanding of the mission of Jesus on this earth. But I don't think that's necessarily the only place you can get a basic moral code, but you've got to get it from somewhere. You can get it from Judaism, you can get it from Islam, you can get it from Buddhism, and we can disagree on the theology all day long, but you've got to get something. And I think maybe Silicon Valley is the epicenter of nothing except greed and ambition, and that produces disfigured souls. Now, how do you get out of that box? You know, we have a wonderful sponsor on the show. You hear me talking about him usually in December when we fill up the summer. I don't know that the Wild Adventure even has any openings right now, but you can book for next year. The Wild Adventure is where a dozen guys go to fish for a week, and they not only fish, they have great conversation, great food, great relaxing time on the Madison River in Montana. And if you've been watching Yellowstone, you know how beautiful it is. It's the greatest non-ministry I've ever been to. I mean, it's like the least religious thing that has got an ethical component to it ever, based on Wild at Heart. And the people who go there, for example, I pull up Tim Jacobs. Here's his testimony about what you learn at the Wild Adventure.
So I'm standing here with
Tim Jacobs.
Where are you from, Tim?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, and where are you now?
Well, right now, I'm in this majestic, beautiful, amazing place where God speaks.
You're kidding. And what are you doing there?
Well, I've had the time of my life, and it's been fantastic. It's rekindled my soul in so many ways, and it's been an absolute privilege to be here.
Really? So what are you at?
What am I at?
Yeah.
I'm at the Smiling Moose Lodge.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
So how'd you hear about this?
I'm a Hugh Hewitt baby.
Oh, yeah. Hugh Hewitt!
No.
That guy is everywhere.
He is everywhere. You can't get away from him.
So what? You heard about this?
Yeah. So for several years, I heard you on the radio, and you seem like a really happy guy.
And I'm a little mentally off, but...
Maybe so, but so am I. So I kept listening to it over and over, and I thought, you know, that would be something that down the road, many years from now, maybe I'll do that. And earlier this year, I got to the place where I realized I needed something. I needed to get away. I needed to figure some stuff out. And the Wild Adventure popped into my mind, and typed into the computer and saw the first picture on the screen and said, that's it. I got to go.
And so how was it?
It was fantastic.
Really?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Have you ever been on anything like this before?
Well, you know, what I thought about was, as a kid, I grew up going to summer camp.
Yeah.
At church. And it was always a time where you got away from everything. You encountered God. You thought about your life, and it set the trajectory for you. And then all of a sudden you graduate, and that's it. And there's nothing for adults. And so in so many ways, this is a summer camp for men. And I mean that in a great way, because it brings you out of it. You're not just doing activities.
This wasn't a kumbaya thing, was it?
Not at all. Not at all. No, it wasn't. But I never did that kind of kumbaya stuff. This was something that brought you out of your element. And I did some things I hadn't done before, fly fishing and that kind of thing.
How do you like that?
I love it.
Good.
I love it. I thought I would be terrible at it, and I really wasn't that good at it. But with the guides, you know, showing you how to do everything and helping you along the way, it was absolute thrill to be able to catch these fish and to be in God's creation and to see all of the beautiful things that He's made. And it just speaks to your soul. And so that's what it is. And so I think what happens is we as men, we got to have this in our lives.
So I was in an organization that measured everything by take-home value.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to ask you, what was the take-home value from this week for you?
I got clarity, and I got courage.
Great.
I drew courage from the men around me who put their arm on my shoulder and said, you know what, you can do this. Step forward. and learning from their stories. And it was a powerful time for me.
Huge. Well, great to have you up here with us, man.
Thanks, Jim.
All right.
That's just one of the testimonials from the wild adventure that get collected every summer. Because I always talk about it on the air, and people go because they hear about it. They go to TWA.us, and they look at it, and they make a reservation. I don't think they have anything. You might go get a waiting list. Someone might cancel because of the COVID. And you can go this summer, but go next summer. Because I honestly, this video by Michael Lofthouse, have we got the audio yet, Dwayne? He's working on it. Has really bugged me all night. All night. I had two things bugging me all night. One was Don Jr. tweeted out last night, if you elect Joe Biden, taxes are going to go up. Now, I tell you that every day. And Mount Rushmore is going to come down. I don't think anyone dare ever take down Mount Rushmore. I just don't believe that would happen. But I do believe taxes will go up. And so I went to bed thinking, I wonder if people are thinking at all, because it's such a weird year for an election. We normally talk about taxes going up or going down. People have no idea how much taxes will go up. I mean, you ask them, how much do you think taxes will go up if Joe Biden wins the presidency? And they should take whatever they paid last year and double it. I really believe that's what's going to happen. Take whatever you paid last year and double it. Because I think that's what's going to happen based upon the proposals that are out there that the AOC and the squad will require. So I was thinking about that. But then I made the mistake. You should never look at Twitter before you go to bed. Never. Turn it off at 5, but I made a mistake last night, because when something gets this many instant virals, and there is Michael Lofthouse, and he's a tech entrepreneur, and I don't know if it's a good tech company or a bad tech company. I don't know if he just got wiped out. I don't know if it's his, you know, second tier elevator financing, third round mezzanine, whatever they call that stuff. That's not my world. I invest in people. I only own one stock, Amazon, and mutual funds. And I invest in people that I know. So there's a great company called Secure Space, which is a startup. I just invested in the young man who's running it because he's just a genius. And I know, and it's, of course, it's become the smartest thing I've ever done financially. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, and I don't do a lot of that, but that's the smartest thing I've ever done financially, because it's amazing, amazing. It's just a combination of technology and need at an intersection like Mark Zuckerberg did. And when you can find one of those, But this Michael Lofthouse might have been my friend who started Secure Space. But after his company, Lofthouse's company, fell apart, Secure Space has taken off. His fell apart. Maybe. I don't know. But there is no excuse, none ever, to launch on someone. Then I saw earlier in the day, it just triggered the Costco incident. And I'm sure you've all seen it. A perfectly healthy, apparently prosperous individual wearing a T-shirt that says free since 1776 on the 4th of July or the 5th of July accosts an older person in a Costco who asked them politely to put on a mask, which I think is a reasonable request inside. I've seen them everywhere. I think it's a reasonable request outside. You may not choose to wear a mask. I think that's irresponsible. I do outside as well. And then I go and I get an ice cream cone. I take it off. I eat my ice cream cone, I put it back on. I mean, this is not hard stuff to do. If you're watching on Instagram or on Facebook, here's my new beautiful Cleveland Browns mask. Now, that's going to get some laughs. But, you know, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year. So I'll just wear that out and about and have a few yucks as I go around. But whether or not you like it to launch on someone because they were not actually engaging. He was not actually engaging with the family. He just began a racist rant. And I go back, if you're just joining me, to what C.S. Lewis said. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors are everlasting splendors. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn. We must play, but our merriment must be of the kind, and it is, in fact, the merriest kind, which exists between people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. That's from his essay, The Weight of Glory. I recommend it to you. It's online. It's free. The Weight of Glory may change your life. It really will. I just, the the draining of decency from the world, and it's not just in America, it's worldwide, has got a lot of sources. Most of it is social media, I believe. The anonymity of social media allows people to develop cruelty as a habit, and then cruelty spills over into their real life. And in their real life, they pay a price. You can pray for them, and you can pray for the family that was victimized. Go ahead and play it. I'll play Relief Factor. I'll talk about Relief Factor after the break. Here's Michael Loftus. Make sure it beeps.
Say it again. Say it again. Now you're shy?
What's wrong with you?
Say it one more time.
Yeah. He's giving him the bird.
We edited it
so it doesn't have the same jarring. He's a wealthy guy in a wealthy restaurant. World's losing its mind. ReliefFactor.com. I'm taking it right now. I didn't forget it. I'm going on vacation for my anniversary, but I'm not forgetting my Relief Factor. There you hear it. I am going to take my Icarian Kirkman Resveratrol and Omega right now. 1995, get you started, America. Go get it. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I'm joined by David Larder, who writes for Defense News. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am great. I've been disturbed since I read your article last week that the U.S. Navy's first four LCSs, the littoral combat ships, are going to leave the fleet in 9 months. I thought we were heading to 355. How do you get there when you decommission four of your newest ships?
You know, limited amount of money being allocated to the Navy in the budget, Hugh, and I think they decided that they made that. You know, revamping those ships and modernizing them for modern for present day usage was too expensive.
Do they run that through the White House, David?
You know, they sure did. And the White House came back with a memo around Christmas time. I don't know if we discussed it directly, but around Christmas time that asked them the exact same question you're asking is, you know, how is this budget getting us to 355? And the answer was that it's not. And your former guest, Thomas Modly, made that point pretty vociferously when he came in that, you know, what the Navy was sending over wasn't adequate to meet the president's goals.
Now, I had Secretary Esper on 3 weeks ago, and he assured me 355 is still the goal. But then I read in Sea Power today by your colleague Richard Burgess, it's not just the LCS. They intend to deactivate 9 ships in 2021. They're not even going to get to 300 for the election, are they?
They may or they may not, but it's interesting enough, the budgets that they've submitted the past 3 years have all said that they were probably going to get to 300 that year, and it's not happened yet. In fact, I think the most important point to make here, Hugh, as you're talking about deactivating ships, is that the number of ships that the Navy has today is less than what the Obama administration said they would have by today. If you go back and look at the budgets, Obama was tracking towards a 306.
So
we've not gone that direction.
So, David, this is obviously someone is not following the president's direction. Is it, in your opinion, the Pentagon, the Navy, or OMB, or all three? There are only three sources of data point here: OMB, Pentagon, meaning Esper and his team, or the Navy, meaning the CNO and the Secretary of the Navy. Which one is it?
I believe it's all three to some degree. And I think the Pentagon, certainly since Mattis came in, was highly focused on readiness, right? And all the money was going towards recouping some of the readiness that I think it's well established. And they did a good job of establishing that the Obama administration, there was a significant gap in how much money was being allocated to train and maintain our forces. So the Navy in particular had a significant readiness gap from the amount of times that they were just deploying aircraft carriers vis-a-vis the deployment schedule, because they would go out for these 9, 10, 11-month deployments to fill presence requirements overseas, but then would come back and have short turnarounds, not enough maintenance, and go right back out. that took a heavy toll on the Navy, and they've been working out of that hole ever since. But the Trump administration came in saying, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to focus on building the fleet up. But there was a disconnect between what Mattis was focused on and what the president said he was focused on, and indeed what the president said he was focused on last week when he said we're building.
Yeah, it's as recently as last week. So I got to ask you the obvious question. I love the Army, love Secretary Esper, love all these people. What has to happen is we're confronting China in the South China Sea and around the world. The Navy has to grow and the Army has to shrink. Is that the wall into which the budget is running?
You know, all the services are making their own arguments. You know, I, as a sailor, I'm probably going to be held up as a rank partisan to say, oh, I absolutely agree. But the Army is making the case on Capitol Hill and is making the case around town. I've seen them in the Brookings Institute in the Pacific. And frankly, the fact that Congress doesn't have a 30-year shipbuilding plan, which they are required to have every year, makes it very difficult for them to say, no, but it's us. We're the ones that that are the Pacific force. Because Congress doesn't know what they want yet. And we've been talking about a new force structure assessment for the entirety of the Trump administration.
I know, it's a wasted 4 years. Honestly, I'm so frustrated, and I believe that the president got rolled by the bureaucracy at the Pentagon, and they rolled him completely. Do you agree?
You know, that's the argument that John Lehman made in the Washington Times this week. You know, he argued that the Navy finally did produce a decent plan. John Lehman being Reagan's Navy secretary.
Who the 600 ship secretary. Yeah.
600 ship secretary. That's right. The Navy finally produced a plan and that it got caught up in Pentagon bureaucracy. And there's probably a lot to that. I think the unfairness to Secretary Esper, and in fairness to the Defense Department, we are talking about what Ron O'Rourke at Congressional Research Service says is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reinvent the Navy from one that's centrally located around aircraft carriers to one that's more focused on distributed operations and long-range strike. And that is going to take some time, except that isn't exactly what the president ran on.
It sounds like a pre-Pearl Harbor Navy. It really does. It sounds like, oh, we got to move from battleships to something. But in the meantime, a war intervened. David Larder from Defense News, thank you. I'll be right back, America. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead.